B-Pod Studios.
Stick to Wrestling is brought to you by FanDuel. And thankfully and gratefully, the NXT people allowed me to first report the breaking news of this Sunday in Lowell, Massachusetts. Dragunov will stand across the ring from my guests at this time in a last man standing match. Dijak. Dijak, welcome to the Sports Hub. Welcome to 98.5. Welcome back to your home.
Thank you.
A big time match here with Dragunov on Sunday at Battleground.
Thank you very much for having me. I feel great being welcomed back, although I do live here, which is a little known fact. I know the vast majority of the NXT roster, not just now but forever, including myself back in the day, lived in Orlando, Florida, but I have been given the wonderful luxury of when I was on Raw, I was able to move back home to New England, and so I've lived here since 2020, and thankfully I didn't have to move back to Orlando because I really don't want to live there. I don't like, as much as I travel to Orlando to film the television show, so I go there quite often. It's basically my second home, but I don't want it to be my first home anymore because my favorite, I don't love it.
My favorite parts of Orlando are the theme parks.
Oh, easily, yeah. My son is bugging me constantly about Disney World. My God, my wife and I determined that we're gonna because my son asks about it so much that I'm gonna find a week where I can bring just him, because it's me, my daughter, my wife, and my son all living in New England. But he's experienced, because he lived the first 4 years of his life in Orlando. He was born in Orlando a month after I had to move down for NXT in my initial run. So his whole first 4 years of existence was Disney World and all that stuff. And he was just getting to the age where it was becoming really exciting, and then boom, COVID. So that was a big dagger to a 2.5-3-year-old's heart. So he's a big Disney World guy, and he wants to go back desperately. So I'm gonna bring him.
There was a local wrestler chat that I was fortunate to be a part of, where there's a bunch of local wrestlers, and I won't out them if they don't want to be outed, but there's a whole Disney Universal chain about all the theme park stuff that's going. Do you want to venture a guess as to who might be on that? Local wrestlers who you've worked with, who you've trained with in the past.
Big Malonis for sure goes to Disney World,
yep,
all the
Brian
time.
Brian Malonis.
Scotty Slade is a huge...
He wasn't on it, but I understand he's part of it, yeah.
Yep. I know Tommaso goes there all the time, but yep, he lives there. Yeah, that's most of the Disney crew that,
yeah,
I'm
Ilya Markopoulos.
Ilya, that's right. He's a huge... His finisher was called the Disney.
Disney he's like the Disney guy.
He is the Disney guy, isn't he? Yeah.
And he just, he'll you know, as soon as he hears this podcast...
Wait till he has kids, then he'll become less of the Disney guy. Unless he moves down there.
Well, you know, I mean, it's either there or Greece for him.
Right.
Like,
right.
I mean, he's there so often.
He is there so often, yeah.
But, you know, thankfully... We get to talk on the record, mm-hmm, which is so exciting for me.
It is.
I think it's been a long time coming, and I'm very thankful that WWE and NXT have approved this, and we can do this. And I think it's safe to say that Dragunov's Judgment Day is coming this Sunday. So about this story.
Yeah, interesting choice of words there.
You know, I'm trying to, you know, Judgment Day, Battleground, those key, like, I got to really hammer it home in my best, like, right, 1990s, like, Battleground.
That's a pretty good Vince. That's
and not- Judgment Day.
I've had the interesting perspective and opportunity to work with Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon, quite a bit. Not so much lately, but over the past 2 or 3
years. We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about...
Just quick, he never speaks to me in the character Vince voice. I never get that. So I wish I did. Like, I wish... I always get kind of like a low grumble, and he's very nice, and it's always a pleasant conversation.
Erica from Barstool once said, when she was in meetings with Vince, mm-hmm, he's a quiet talker.
He's a quiet talker.
Yeah.
Which is like... You know, I kind of want to get yelled at a little bit. I don't want to get yelled at that much, but...
What a maneuver!
Right,
that's,
yeah,
really what I want. That's the Vince that I want.
God damn it! I need you to grab him by the... You know? That's what I want.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Between the CM Punk impression and the Bruce Pritchard impressions through years of podcasts, that's how I've kind of developed the Vince McMahon, the Vince McMahon voice. But you've got a Last Man Standing match at Battleground, Dragunov's Judgment Day, mm-hmm. as I would say. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this story and how it's progressed and gotten to a Last Man Standing match on Sunday in Lowell?
It's been tremendous. I mean, all I've ever wanted out of professional wrestling, especially with WWE, is story. I mean, it's funny because, like, me as a person and as a character and as a presentation, I feel like the focus always becomes the in-ring. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's certainly, you know, a passion of mine. You know, I put all of my thought and all of my energy and all of my focus into the in-ring product because I train constantly. To this day, I still train, even though I'm training with younger guys. I'm just constantly. Most guys, you know, they kind of stop training after a while, certainly consistently. But I just have a consistent need, especially if I'm not wrestling frequently and NXT doesn't do a tremendous amount of house shows. So I try to be in the ring doing matches, stuff like that. The in-ring is extremely, extremely important to me. I wish it was more important to the overall product, but the reality is if you're being honest with yourself as a performer, it's not. It just isn't. It's the stories and the characters and those things end up becoming more important and valuable to the consumer, to the fan. And I recognize that as a consumer and as a fan. You know, I used to watch guys back in the day who I would say, those are the guys I enjoy. Those are the guys I love. Those are the guys I watch. And there was a pretty decent separation between character and storyline and like in-ring work. You know, there's guys I look back on now and I'm like, oh, they're the better workers. But as a kid, I can look back and say I didn't care as much about those guys because they weren't booked a certain way. They weren't involved in the storyline. They weren't. So now as a worker myself and being in the WWE and part of the system and stuff, I know how important it is to be a part of those storylines and things like that. And this one specifically has been done tremendously well. I'm super proud and excited about all the work that we've done, the vignettes. The whole thing, so many stories. I'm gonna try to make this as quick as possible because there's just this huge origin story, okay? And this is all to culminate with why these vignettes and this backstage stuff is so important.
And these vignettes, they were streamed over the course of a couple different NXT shows on Tuesday night on USA.
Correct, yes.
They were outstanding mm-hmm. because as I saw the last vignette, on the Tuesday before NXT allowed me to break the news of the Last Man Standing match, which thank you again to the creative team for letting me do that. Mm-hmm. But they left it with the cliffhanger of it's going to be a Last Man Standing match without saying it's going to be a Last Man Standing match. That's good synergy right there. So tell me your origin story.
Very much so, yeah. And the second we did those two things with me standing on top of the stairs and then the backstage where he said, I'm still standing, I said, oh, it's going to be a Last Man Standing match. And then they told me it was going to be an I Quit match. And I was like, oh, that doesn't really. I'm like, did you mean Last Man Standing? He goes, either Last Man Standing or I Quit. And I was like, well, I hope it's Last Man Standing.
So I'll break the wall down for you. I knew it was going to be a Last Man Standing
match.
Yeah,
you told
me
that.
Maybe they're just messing with you.
And I had a debate with you. I'm like, well, they told me I quit. So.
Yeah, they told me Last Man Standing. Turns out, and I'm about to send the tweet that says Last Man Standing. So
I was hoping you were right. Yeah, so those like dark vignettes with the table and the light and the tape recorder and the interrogation was all a manifestation of ideas that I had in my head that I put together, and I put together a scene in my basement at my house where I live now. And I fixed all the lighting and stuff. I put a table out. I bought a tape recorder. And this was all before I even knew I was going to NXT. Maybe I just found out I was going back to NXT sometime about a year ago. And I had this whole idea. And the reason I had this idea was because of a conversation that I had with Vince McMahon, where it was sometime around WrestleMania last year, and we were doing the T-Bar stuff, and I was on Main Event every week, and it wasn't what I envisioned for myself as a WWE wrestler. You know, I've worked,
and this is in reference to the T-Bar character
at that incarnation. Yeah,
and we're gonna get to more
sure.
of that.
Yeah.
Trust
I'm,
me.
Yeah, and I'm
this
just,
is getting to the Dijak character that we see now.
Yep, and just toward the tail end of that, you know, I was barely ever on TV. I think in 2022 I was on Raw maybe twice, and I was one of them was a battle royal, the other one was getting squashed by Omos. So just it wasn't what I wanted out of the WWE. I was happy to have a job. I was happy that they kept me employed. I was happy to be in the ring every week on Main Event in front of a large crowd. Working guys were great, like Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin. You know, there was this rotation of guys on the show Main Event. Unfortunately, there kind of still is. They're integrating NXT guys a little bit more, but it's a good spot in some aspects, but it's not the spot that anybody like covets. Nobody dreams of being on Main Event for the rest of their life. You know, it's a good spot to be on a few times, but that's not...
Sure.
Everybody wants to Main Event WrestleMania.
It's a building
everybody
block. Like Carmelo yeah, Hayes exactly, worked Main exactly. Event at TD Garden.
And that's then, an exciting spot. Not forever. Right?
No, but so it was
it's a tough spot to be in. And I didn't... I wanted to express that to Mr. McMahon. So I met with him, and we had a great conversation. 20-minute conversation. He asked me about my background, my life, my all that stuff, and I told him about my legitimate background in criminal justice. I have a undergraduate and a graduate degree from Bridgewater State, where I played two sports, but I have these graduate degrees in criminal justice. I said I told him my favorite movies are the movie Seven and Sin City, these like crime based sort of film noir dramas and stuff, and he'd collected all this information, and the most kind of feedback I got from him was there's something about the criminal mind. I like that. There's something there. And I said, okay, you know, I agree with that. I've never really looked at it from that perspective. I think that's wonderful. So I drafted this whole character. I gave the notes to the writers. I gave them to him, and honestly, not much ever came of it. I don't know if it sat on the back burner. I don't know if they wanted to get to it. I don't know if whatever happened. And then there was this a bit of a paradigm shift and a transition in terms of creative leadership. And I started having these conversations more so with Hunter instead of because he was now running the brand that I was on. So I was trying to integrate that. And that's kind of how this NXT transition started to happen. And as soon as I found that out, I said, great. I had this meeting with Sean and Matt and Johnny. I think those were the three in the room.
So Sean Michaels, Matt and Johnny are part of the creative team.
Matt Bloom and Johnny Russo. Yep. They're all basically.
Johnny's a local guy.
He is. Yeah. They're all kind of the, Matt is too.
Matt is too. Yep.
They're all kind of the foundation of the, yep. yeah, of the NXT product. And as soon as I sat down with them, I had the presentation ready, just because I had already done it for Vince.
Sure.
And I even filmed an extra vignette that I just talked about where I lighted it and I did the smoke, and they looked at it and they said, this is spectacular. And when you hear, this is great, we're going to run with it in WWE, I've heard that before and it doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
So I heard them say that and I said, okay, these guys I've worked with these guys before. They've never done me wrong. That being said, this is still WWE. I'm going to take everything with a grain of salt. And to their credit, 3 or 4 weeks later, they started the backstage stuff, and we started filming the vignettes. And I said, wow, this is pretty much exactly what I pitched and envisioned. And they were right on board. And we've been moving and advancing from that stage ever since. And I could not possibly be happier with the presentation.
I would say that there's some bias there because Matt and Johnny are both local guys.
Mm-hmm.
So my hope is that they would want to see a local guy do well. I think it's also because me as the fan who reads enough of the newsletters and has enough connections within the wrestling world, there's some sort of balance where you're told to do X, Y, and Z and go out there and do that versus here's a performer, here's a superstar, here's a wrestler who goes and says, this is a character that I think I would be successful at. And the creative team digests that and goes, oh, you know what? Yeah, we could work this in, but maybe at not the necessarily accelerated pace, because like this is something that I've kind of found out just through my experiences with people, is that some of the creative team have 1 week on their agenda. What's the short-term 1 week show that we need to do tonight? And the other creative team member has, what are we doing in 6 months? What are we doing in a year? And the key is to get those two to cross over and look at Dijak and go, this is a two-year story arc to where we want to go, because he checks all of these boxes with this character, his size, his look, his promo, all of that stuff. And then they get going with it. And if they like it and the fans are reacting, then it's golden. Mm-hmm. But if week two doesn't go well, because I know years ago, there was a performer who made their debut, had a big win. They were doing a unique character. Vince saw it, didn't like how it was week one. And the next week they were digital exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was, now they're just on the house shows.
Happens all the time.
And it's mind-blowing to me that that happens, but it was like Vince liked the idea, and then he saw the idea executed and was like, okay, we're going to move on from this. What's next? And that's the state of WWE as I've kind of found it. So that's a long way of saying I'm happy that the local guys and Sean and Triple H, they all liked it. I'm glad that Vince liked it, mm-hmm. liked the idea of it. So that's
Jury's out on whether he likes it. I haven't spoken to him since, so I hope he likes it. Basically his idea. So
well, I mean, if you've gotten this TV time and they're shooting these quality vignettes on it, I would assume that they like it. I mean, we'll see, we'll see who wins on Sunday, as that might be the real determining factor as to who likes it. But, it's a great background into a character. And thank you for sharing all of that. That's all great. But that character started with a brain seed, and we might as well get to it now. Like, sure. Because we're kind of working backwards a little bit, mm-hmm. but like you talked about your interactions with Mr. McMahon.
Yep.
I'll be cordial. I'll call him Mr. McMahon.
He told me straight to my face, you can call me Vince. But then like sometimes he doesn't like it. He's
hot and cold.
He changes. He's a human being just like any of us.
So let's get to what I think a lot of people are fascinated by. I know I'm fascinated by it. And I know in real time, I told you, like, I hope this character works for you because mm-hmm. it's an opportunity on Raw, SmackDown, wherever they're going to put you. But Retribution, mm-hmm. the T-Bar character, how was it pitched to you? Who made the phone call, if you can divulge that, mm-hmm. if it wasn't Bruce Pritchard, because I assume Bruce makes all the phone calls?
Most of them.
So who calls you? How's the idea pitched? Like, I want to know all the background story of Retribution and specifically T-Bar.
Okay. So it's late 2019 and NXT gets our first USA contract. We're live on the USA Network. This is a super exciting time for all of us. There's this huge Survivor Series pitch, third brand, NXT wins it, all this stuff. We're trying to get off the ground. Hunter keeps telling us third brand. We're all on board. Everybody's on board. It's a super exciting time. The creative direction kind of input that I was given, and again, everything comes with a grain of salt. So anytime I'm told anything, I go, okay, if that happens, that'll be nice. I never set my heart to anything, which I think they know about me by now, because a lot of times they just won't tell people anything because it changes so often and everything is so volatile and fluid that you can tell someone your plans and then it just goes haywire and they're like, why didn't my plans out? Everybody freaks out. But I think I've reacted enough times in a proper manner where they know they can trust me to take everything with a grain of salt.
Sure.
So back then it's early 2020 and kind of the plans that are laid out to me involve what actually ended up happening, which was, myself and Keith Lee at Takeover Portland, which you mentioned.
It's a great match.
And it ended up happening. And then I think that was eventually going to kind of start to involve Damian Priest. He started nightsticking me and stuff. The night before, I was just talking about this with a friend back at PC. The night before, PC being the Performance Center in Orlando where we shoot NXT now, but the first time we ever shot there for television live was the night before the pandemic struck. It was our first show out of the Performance Center. I think they were testing just to kind of see how it goes. And I remember COVID was starting to ramp up, and this was the night where the NBA announced we're shutting down the season.
Yep.
So we're all sitting there like, oh, like this is definitely not good. And then the next day, boom, everything was shut down. WWE was shut down.
The Celtics that night were going to play an empty arena game against the Bucks. It was a Thursday night game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the world shut down.
Right, right, yeah. So we filmed NXT live that night. Damian Priest ran out with his club and did something to Keith Lee, and I helped Keith Lee. I chased away Priest. I helped Keith Lee up, and Keith powerbombed me. This was all to build to a triple threat at WrestleMania TakeOver. I was never told any of this, but my guess going into that at that point was that I was probably going to, that would probably have been my last match on NXT. No one ever told me that. That was just kind of how I felt and kind of the feeling that I was getting. And I think that was kind of the building point, because I think I was slated for a call-up. In hindsight, I know I was slated for a call-up because I ended up getting called up, sort of, in a weird mixed capacity because of the pandemic. But a few months before that, the booking that was being relayed to me trended a little bit in a different direction. It seemed more like we were working towards me winning the North American Championship around that time. And then there was a movement sometime around January or February where that conversation kind of shifted. And again, nobody ever promised me any of these things, so I'm not trying to paint it like it was. It just kind of felt that way in terms of things I was being told and presentation wise and stuff. And you, as a wrestler, you're always trying to put pieces together and guess and whatever. And
we do that in all of our worlds. We're trying to figure out what's going exactly on, what's next, how do we get to the next
one. So I kind of felt that shift. I said, okay, whatever, great. I'm super excited to get called up. I've always felt like I would do well on the main roster, et cetera. Pandemic hits. We're doing these horrible, painful shows at a Full Sail. No crowd, no whatever. It's just pro wrestling without a crowd is the most defeating, depressing thing in the history of the planet. If I never have to do it ever again for the rest of my life, I will die happy. That match specifically, myself, Keith, and Damian Priest, we ended up doing the triple threat. They called it TakeOver, even though it wasn't a TakeOver. Right. It was on the USA Network. And it was just the most depressing match I've ever had, because these are two of my best friends in the business. We're so excited for this match. We have all these ideas. We think we're going to be in front of this packed house. We all have cool gear ideas, cool ideas for tables, and just all these different things. And it ends up coming to a head at an empty
warehouse. Well, I think the same thing happened with, it was supposed to be the final battle for Gargano and Ciampa.
Exactly.
Which
exactly
had been postponed the year before. Yep. In New York or yep. Brooklyn, mm-hmm. because Ciampa got hurt.
Right.
Like, I remember that was the infamous one where I'm front row forward and, you know, I'm doing all the two count signs, and yep. the Adam Cole Gargano match was phenomenal, but the pandemic ruined a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. They ended up getting a not a tremendously better scenario, but they got one of those
cinematic matches,
which to WWE's credit, like the Boneyard match is one of my favorite matches of all time.
Taker and AJ Styles. Tremendous. Outstanding.
Outstanding match. I know that JB and
Jeremy Borash was great, who I just met the other day when mm-hmm. he was around here. What a great guy. What a great producer.
Him, and I don't know if Jimmy was with him or not, but Jimmy's his right-hand man. They did all like the Matt Hardy compound
stuff. The final deletion thing in Impact. Thing. Yep.
Yeah, so all of anything you've ever seen that's like really well shot in the history of professional wrestling, those two probably had a strong hand in it, including my vignettes and these things that we've been talking about.
Jeremy's just such a delight to work with. He was great.
Both of them are outstanding to work with, and they have brilliant minds for professional wrestling, especially when it comes to production. That being said, we got none of that. We got a ring and some cameras and no fans, and yeah. It was painful. It hurt. It was no fun. Especially the way that me and Keith and Damien wrestle, everything is like almost spectacle based. Like, mm-hmm. like we do something, and it's almost it's hard to put into words. It's almost not impressive unless you get the reaction of people going, "I can't believe I just watched two guys this big do a flipping whatever off the top rope."
So to simplify it from my point of view, and again, this is just me who's, you know, just a fan with a little bit of knowledge. It's you're trained a certain way, and you were mm-hmm. trained locally
yep.
to XYZ moment, pause, reaction, next. Mm-hmm. But you got to let that crowd kind of react to it, and you have to build the anticipation for the payoff. There's a correct. More sexual way of putting it, but you know, the climactic yeah. moment of
pending,
whatever series you're
pending your style and pending what yep. you're doing. When it comes to like me and Keith and Luis, who's Damian Priest,
yep.
just these bigger athletic guys, we can't easily stray away from that formula. You know, there's other formulas that work better with less crowd interaction. Submission grappling styles mm-hmm. or maybe like
and that's why they featured Bryan Danielson as much as they did during the pandemic, him and AJ Styles, like the correct. Dolph Ziggler. Because
I was
they
in the room
that,
for that match, by the way.
I love Dolph Ziggler.
The AJ Styles Bryan Danielson match, or Daniel Bryan match at the PC where they did that.
Yeah.
Because they had all the wrestlers around, and I was off in a corner like hiding because I was one who there's so many stories about the pandemic, but there was a list of wrestlers who weren't allowed to be on TV, but we had to be there just for the sake of noise.
Sure.
So I'm standing off camera just screaming really loudly. Great match, by the way. Super fun to watch, all things being considered of the pandemic.
The most interesting something to wrestle with Bruce Pritchard will be the pandemic stuff when it gets there.
When he ever, yeah, I don't know.
When he's able to do it.
Yeah, he played a massive role in it.
I love Bruce. I think Bruce is awesome.
I'm sure he has a ton of stories about it.
So we're at the point where it's Tampa, you're in the empty arena, mm-hmm. you think you're about to get called up. So what happens after that? How do we get to Retribution and T-Bar?
At some point after that, I'm feuding with Gargano for a little bit. This is right around his heel turn, so he's starting the Way stuff, but it's not called the Way yet, and it's just whatever. I was his first heel feud. I was the babyface of all things. I was the babyface. Johnny Gargano was the heel. Maybe the two opposites of those ends of the spectrum, but that's just the way it worked out at that time. So we finished up with him. Sometime in that process, I was like, "What is happening? I don't know where I am. I'm just kind of floating around this kind of weird area in NXT." So I asked for a phone call with Hunter. He ended up calling me. He told me that I was being I was going to be part of Raw, and I should be in touch with Paul Heyman, who was running Raw at that time. I said, great. I reached out to Paul Heyman. He was excited to get back to me. Next week, Paul Heyman gets released from that position.
Oh.
Still works with the company, but he's no yeah. longer the showrunner for Raw. So I'm like, all right. And I think it kind of got through to me through the grapevine that Bruce was now not only just doing SmackDown, but also doing Raw. At this time, both of those shows are being run out of the Performance Center. And we're all kind of half expected to be there. There's like a list, and it's kind of this muddy sort of area. But anyway, I start going to those, and I start kind of floating around the back, just kind of trying to figure out like, hey, do you guys know I'm called up? Is anyone communicating? Because it's right. the pandemic. Everything's a mess. Who knows? Who yep. knows what? Somewhere in there, we kind of start to get a feel. I hear through the grapevine that maybe they want to do a tag team with me and Shane Thorne, who's one of my best friends. I just went to his wedding. Congratulations to Shane and Kimmy. Wonderful, wonderful day trip to California for me. I don't know if anyone's ever done that from Boston, but I did a day trip to California. So I start hearing those rumors. Amongst all of that, I get a call from Johnny Russo who says, hey, we have one more thing for you in NXT. Great, whatever. We go down. Keith wins the championship. I celebrate with him backstage or on the ramp or whatever. We start running this Karrion Kross angle. We do the whole program. He beats me up a bunch. He chokes me out, kills me off TV. That was the last time I ever appeared on NXT before I confronted Wesley. as this new character. So then there's a couple more months off. We're kind of sitting in purgatory again, still in the PC, still in whatever. Eventually I'm like, whatever, I'm going to go introduce myself to Vince McMahon. I think I made a pretty bad impression the first time because it's this super awkward system where it's like, it's almost funny because it's this building that now works as the training center for the NXT. So I'm in there like every day. But back then it was just kind of these like big warehouse rooms with like a bunch of different segments and you're not really sure what's behind each door, but sure. Every door you pass, there's like more security and more seats and more things happening. And I'm like, this is very strange, but I'm just trying to like, so I'm like talking in security. I'm like, I just want to introduce myself to Mr. McMahon, whatever. Eventually, I get to the door where I think they're having a production meeting behind, but I'm not sure. I talk to his security guard, who's a great guy, and he tells me, yeah, we're just waiting for them to something. No one ever knows exactly what's happening at any point, so you're kind of guessing. So I kind of knock on the door, hoping that he's just kind of sitting right there by himself. I knock on the door. I come in the room. And it's just a production meeting, and everybody kind of like looks over at me and then goes back to the meeting. And so I'm just kind of standing there in this weird purgatory where like I feel awkward, they feel awkward, everyone feels awkward. They're having a conversation. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Do I leave? Do I stay? Do I whatever? So I'm just standing there awkwardly. Eventually like 15 minutes goes by, and then finally everyone gets sick of me standing there. So Vince calls me over. And I go over, and I'm very like cordial and nice. I don't know if I was too friendly or whatever, but we have a conversation. I just introduce myself. I say I was told that I'm part of Raw. I just want to introduce myself. Here's my name. I just want to know if there's anything I can do. Anything, just a normal sort of whatever conversation. I was told through the grapevine that kind of rubbed him the wrong way or something. I don't know. Who knows in pro wrestling?
You went in there. You offered service.
Sure.
Which should be the right approach to things, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if I did it the wrong way or maybe I was too...
Maybe you should have went up to him and gone, damn it, I'm on Raw.
You never know. Sometimes that's the better approach. Some guys have had great success.
Show fortitude.
Yeah, right, exactly. So anyway, a month goes by, I never hear anything. I hear all these rumors. I go in to talk to him again. this time it's a much more productive conversation, just one-on-one. And I actually, so I actually, Retribution angle had already started. The stuff with the people throwing the Molotov cocktails and all that stuff wasn't terribly well received across the board. I don't think the office was terribly happy with it. I don't think the fans were terribly happy with it.
I was a little bit offended by it.
Right.
Because this is a real world thing
right.
that is affecting lives. Mm-hmm. And now it's part of the television show, and wrestling's in this weird space of it's sort of soap opera, but it's sort of reality.
Correct.
And it just didn't fit with me.
Yeah. So, and that was a very common feeling. I saw it as an opportunity for me and others to integrate what we were trying to do into the product. Because it was me, there was a few other of us who were kind of in this weird limbo space. So I drafted up this whole concept. I still have the pitch somewhere, but I think ultimately I ended up pitching like seven names, and maybe three or four of which ended up actually getting used. But I drafted the whole thing. I made a video just like I told you about the new character, similar sort of video. I had this like this sort of quasi Bane Darth Vader mask on, but I took it off. I had these eye things in. I wanted it to be kind of like an entrance mask sort of thing. Just a mysterious sort of angry at the company, wanted to get retribution, wanted to take down the system sort of thing. But within the context of what had happened to me, you know, I was Dominik Dijakovic. I felt I was, this is in character now. Like I felt I was misused. I was killed off by Karrion Kross. I feel like the company abandoned me. I have this gripe with the company. I want to destroy it. Whatever. That was my vision. That's kind of what I presented. And then I picked out three or four other people who kind of fit into that sort of thing. I drafted the whole thing up. I pitched it straight to Mr. McMahon himself. I showed him the video. He watched all of it. He absorbed all of it. We had a 5-minute conversation after that about like professionalism and stuff like that. So, sure. So in hindsight, I think he, liked this approach better than my first approach. A few weeks later, we start getting a little bit of these hints that, like, hey, we're going to start using you as the people in the masks, the people doing the anarchist stuff or whatever. Brennan Williams, who's now Massé on Raw. He was the first to appear under a mask, but they'd started using some wrestlers, hit or miss, whatever, in a couple of spots. Then it started to be more consistent over time. My first appearance in that role, I think, was the first Thunderdome episode, where we all jumped Braun Strowman after Vince himself was in the ring. We were all hiding under the ring for that. So it started to kind of whittle its way down to a more core group of people. Ultimately, it ended up being the people that you saw on television. Myself, Brennan, Shane, Mia, Mercedes, I think, are the five that... Did I miss anyone there? I think that's everyone. Yeah, so in presentation-wise, we found out that day that we were getting these new names and that we were going to be wearing these masks and that the masks were... We were going to wear them all the time. They weren't just going to be entrance masks and that we were going to have face paint on underneath it. So I'd say from my initial presentation to what ended up actually happening, I'd say it was about half and half in terms of what actually happened and what was presented to happen. That being said, I think we all agreed that if done properly, it could have worked. I think the talent evolved, especially once they added on Ali in his capacity, in his role.
Oh, he's great. he's fabulous.
I think.
And his background as a former Chicago police officer, mm-hmm. I think, would have played into that well.
I think so. And it was a great opportunity. We got good time. We opened up Raw. We closed Raw. There was lots of positives. It always just ended up being an uphill battle because of forces that were kind of outside of the control of what we were doing internally in WWE.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I know there was a lot of pressure, we'll call it, politically on the networks, and I got some feedback about a lot of that, and I know that played a role into some of the presentation, which I get, and I don't hold like a ton of grudges over this stuff because I really think it was just people doing their best in a real time scenario, trying to adjust on the fly and make what you could out of. You can't do this anymore. You can't do that anymore. Yep. And I'm not insinuating that this is someone in WWE because it's not. It was outside forces that I'm not going to talk about because I just heard them as rumors. I believe them to be true, but I don't know that they're true, so I'm not going to speak of them like they are true. But I just heard that there was a lot of outside mitigating factors that were affecting how we were booking creatively. And it just kind of ended up being too much of an uphill battle, and we all kind of slid backwards down this.
Well, and I think to that point is when you have a company like USA Network, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that you're saying this is just my perception as a fan.
Yep.
USA Network is paying $1 billion over the course of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They should have some say in what is being broadcast on their
television. Oh, they definitely
screen.
Do, yeah.
And Network. I realize that they have a lot of say, so... If you get enough, because it happens here at the radio station,
mm-hmm.
if you get enough complaints about X, Y, or Z, that's going to go to your provider, and then they're going to have to make adjustments because you want to make the person who's writing the check for $1 billion
correct.
Over 5 years reportedly happy.
Correct.
And that's simple.
Yeah.
That's simple. Do you know what the end point of retribution might have been? Was it perceived as it was going to be a main event match against X, Y, and Z? Was it going to be a championship run? Was it going to be, or was it just one of those things where it's like, we have this group. They're angry. They're going to be on TV.
Yeah, I was never told anything. I heard through the grapevine. I heard rumors of like, and I think I probably pitched as much like a Retribution versus these guys for the control of the company at WrestleMania or whatever. I think the rumors I heard were that at Survivor Series for something.
Sure.
No one in creative ever told me that, which I wouldn't expect them to.
Yeah.
They very rarely tell for the reasons I spoke about earlier.
Oh, of course.
And expectations and things like that. So I never heard anything like that. But it wouldn't surprise me, especially the way that we were presented at first. I mean, we were presented as a fairly big deal, even though it was in the pandemic and everything kind of sucked in the pandemic just because it was all in a literal vacuum and there's no crowd or whatever. But like we got some good screen time. We were beating up important people. We dropped Bobby Lashley. We were beating up the Hurt Business. We dropped Braun Strowman. Opening segment of SmackDown. Opening segment of Raw. Closing. These are big spots in the WWE television lore. So that being said, it just kind of fell off quickly and for outside sort of reasons. And, you know, we just had to kind of adjust on the fly.
Because Vince got behind the idea, and I'm projecting here. Mm-hmm. Like Vince got behind the idea and then the network seemingly pushed back because of their feedback.
I think so. I'm guessing so.
I'm totally guessing too.
You're not
saying this. I'm guessing.
Sure.
It,
yeah.
Because that logically makes sense.
Because at the end of the day, like part of it was my presentation, but ultimately the whole thing ended up being WWE's brainchild. Like it wasn't my character, it was their characters. It was Vince, Bruce, whoever was in that meeting and came up with these characters. It was their characters. So I thought for sure that, they'd love their own sort of idea. And I was like, great. I love it too.
The whole $1 million man thing.
And honestly, yeah, right. Exactly. And honestly,
if Vince could be any one character, he would have been the $1 million man.
And honestly, I had been kind of just a guy, wrestler guy who just kind of wants to win championships for a long time. And it wasn't taking off. In WWE, there's lots of just a guys, right? And most of them are way better just a guys than I am. Because if you're just a guy, now you're talking about Brock Lesnar, who's just a guy, but he's also the UFC heavyweight champion. Bobby Lashley, who's just, and when I say just a guy, it's not a demeaning. It's just like, they're not like
over the top.
Doink
promo,
the clown. They're not, they're a
occupational
person.
Occupational wrestler, superstar.
Their occupation is wrestler. They go by probably their real name and they just beat up guys and win championships. That's a great spot. If you're a legitimate ass kicker, you look like $1 billion, you look like whatever. I mean, I have a decent background and a decent look and a decent, but I'm not like the best at any of those things. So if I'm going to be just a guy, I'm going to fall right into the middle of the pack with those guys. So to me, the T-bar thing was like, okay, great. I got a mask. I got a paint. I got a thing. The anarchist, there's just this whole thing. They're destroying the ring. There's just all this depth. And I'm like, this is a wonderful opportunity for me. Ended up not working out. But what I took from that was, I'm never going to go back to being just a guy. I'm never going to survive amongst the wolves if I'm not something much more interesting. And that's how we got to where we are today, kind of in a sense.
No, it's great because I remember talking to you in Dallas. It was WrestleMania 32 weekend. You were working for Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to you, like, you're 6'9". 6'9" is what they bill you at?
Yeah, right now they bill me at 6'9", yes.
Yeah, so you're 6'9". You're 300 and something pounds. You're jacked to the gills. You got this great look. You can do all these athletic things. Like, why can't Promotion X find you in a top spot? And now fast forward all of these years and it's like, well, who are you? Right?
Right.
And I don't mean that I mean that in a, like, what do you stand for? What are you selling?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that kind of like education of, like, I talked to Shawn Michaels about this a few weeks ago on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, when did Shawn Michaels have that moment of, he's just a wrestler working in WWE, to he's a WWE superstar?
Right.
And there's a difference there, and there's a difference in emotional fan, fan investment emotionally. Yeah. And that's one of the bigger differences I find.
And
I like you because I know you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No. So I'm going to go see you at Chaotic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go see you, NXT, you've worked with Tommaso Ciampa. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to support you because we're friendly. You've always been nice to me, which I appreciate. We've socialized a little bit. But, like, to get to that bigger audience, like, you have to be more than my friend Dijak.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Of course. And that was my whole goal behind this new presentation of the crooked detective, film noir, just everything that goes into it. It was a whole amalgamation of different things that I talked about between Hartigan from Sin City and just these different things, just to give more depth and mystery and character and presentation to what I was doing going forward. And as we're working with it right now, I'm starting to bring tiny little bits and pieces, not too much of like my real life into it, because I know that people are going to eventually want more and more of that, just as they did with The Undertaker. You know, he couldn't mm-hmm. be sit up white faced dead man forever, so eventually he started getting a little more American Badass, a little more of his facials, a little more of his personality, while all still maintaining this wonderful, multifaceted, intriguing character that he had for so many years. And that's kind of my goal. You know, he's the creme de la creme. He's the benchmark of characters in terms of WWE, especially for, you know, big man tall characters. So he's always the guy that I kind of looked up to. Not to say that I'm the Undertaker, obviously, because that's not even close to the case.
You'd beat him right now, though.
I'm what?
You'd beat him right now.
Well, I don't think he's, as much as I'd love for him to put on the boots one more time and face me, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think he's said as much. I don't even think he plans on putting the costume on for appearances or anything like that.
No, he's doing these one-man shows, and he's...
Yeah. I got to train with him a few times, which was spectacular, and I got to watch video with him and break down stuff, and he's just a tremendous person to be around. He always wants to give back to the business, so he's a massive role model of mine.
Yeah, I came into this kind of having like a vision of how to format this thing out, and this has totally exceeded my expectations as far as the wrestling talk of it. Mm-hmm. Like, because I'm fascinated by Vince McMahon and all those interactions and stuff like that. But I did promise you that we would actually talk sports, because you're a huge local sports fan. Because look, like, if I didn't have my regular, you know, 2 to 6 job to produce,
yes,
because that's kind of like our barrier of time right now.
Right, right, right.
Like, I could do this for this would be the old RF video, like, sit down interview for 8 hours the course of 3 tapes.
Right,
right. But I have some certain time constraints, and they're not podcast time constraints. Mm. It's you know, the Celtics just won a big playoff game. I have to go do my producer stuff and chirp Felger as much as humanly possible.
Because totally understood.
I know that you're a listener to the station, which I appreciate so much.
I am.
So you,
long time, first time.
That's going to be the name of my book.
Is it?
When I get out, when they eventually fire me, because I'll do something stupid.
Yeah.
They'll fire me, and then I'll be working the bakery at Wegmans. Because that's right. Where I go shopping, right, and right. You know, anybody can really, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't just, like, I know that I can bake at a relatively high level. So,
oh, good.
So I have that. I can be a never mind. But I know that you're going to be at the, I promised Sarge that I would shout this out. Mike okay. Riley,
yeah.
As I usually call him, but everybody else calls him Sarge. Sarge. You'll be at the New England Revolution soccer match Saturday night.
I will.
7:30 is the Revs take on the Chicago Fire. Are you a soccer fan?
I unfortunately am not.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I have been to a New England Revolution game before.
I'll tell you what, they're a good time. They're a good take.
The last time I was there was 1996, so okay. it's been a minute. But
it's a good take. You'll have a good time.
I haven't been there
in a few years, sure. But the Revs always put on a good show.
I know the
family events, you know, all that stuff.
I'm super excited for it. A lot of my friends, Big Damo, Killian Dane, when he was in NXT, is a really close friend of mine, and he's a huge soccer fan, a huge footy fan. So I was kind of texting him and rubbing it in his face, 'cause he loves MLS. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to go to. I love all sports. It's not in my top sport, mostly because I'm extremely bad at it. But whereas I'm a pretty decent athlete, I played 2 sports in college, so those are the sports I tend to gravitate towards. But
basketball and football, if my research is correct.
I played basketball and football. Yeah, I played football at UMass.
You're a redshirt, right?
I redshirted at UMass for 1 year, and then I transferred because they put me on the offensive line. I didn't find that very fun, which at the end of the day, I think sports should be fun.
Great.
As far as I know.
So should pro wrestling. So should sports right, entertainment.
Right, right, yeah. And I do have a ton of fun doing pro wrestling.
It's not fun. Like, this is one of my things, is because there are people who hate watch, hate listen, and mm-hmm. you know, that's what they choose to do.
Sure.
If I don't like a product, I'm not going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if I want to enjoy something, because, you know, I do the sports radio thing yeah. and I enjoy being as villainous as humanly possible mm-hmm. at times
sure.
doing that.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun to me.
Yeah.
You know, this to me, talking to you,
yeah.
and don't worry, we're not wrapping up yet. I promised you sports takes, so we're going to get to your sports takes. But me, like, getting to interact with you on a personal level and mm-hmm. here on the record, like, this is fun to me. Like, I want to promote oh, yeah. you and promote all the local guys who have been nice.
It's fun to me
to
too. The hate watching of pro wrestling is I think we've pulled back the curtain so much that people want to be in the intricacies of the business.
I'm fascinated by it,
which is great. I love that for them, and I love that just in general. That being said, don't get caught up being part of the business aspect of it so much that you turn into, here's what happens is, like, I have to watch pro wrestling with a critical eye, right? Mm-hmm. It's my job to watch pro wrestling with a critical eye. So if I watch SmackDown with my friends, I'm going to say that stunk. I don't like that, because that makes me better at my job. If I watch things with a critical eye, that means that when I'm doing it, I'm critiquing myself. I'm doing the exact same thing. I watch back my own performance. I go, that stunk. That could have been better. That was good. That got a good reaction, whatever. And I think the fans have become that so much that now they go, oh, that sucked. We don't want you guys to do that. We want you guys to enjoy the product. If you don't enjoy something, that's great. Or that's it's your right to not enjoy something. But I feel like you don't, as a fan, you don't need to watch with a critical eye. That's, if you're looking to criticize, it should only be if it's your job to do so. Because anything short of that, like, I would never watch sports with a critical eye, right?
Well, that's kind of where I come in.
exactly, because it's your job to
yeah.
do that. It's you guys get paid money to criticize and to say, this is what's wrong with the Celtics. And I can say that. I can watch and go, oh, God, you know, games 1 through 3, Jason Tatum, he said he's the greatest player on earth. He didn't play. Right, yeah. He certainly didn't look like it in games 1 through 3. I can make those observations,
yeah.
but I'm not, like, looking for it. I'm not circling what he said and, like, because that's your job.
Yeah.
That's their job. It's your job to point that out to the masses. My job is to just watch and hope that the Celtics win, because
right.
they do. I just hope that they
right.
win. The same way that we as pro wrestlers just desperately want you guys to just watch the show and just hope that this guy wins and say, hey, that was a great match, or that was an okay match, and I love watching this product. I love this show better. Whatever. And if you have a critical take, that's okay. If it jumps off the page at you, that's totally fine.
Well, there's also this line of, like, the fan that, like, hate watches a product.
Mm-hmm.
And all that they're doing is they're just looking to say,
oh, yeah.
this sucks, instead of, like, I go to wrestling shows to go and enjoy myself.
Mm-hmm.
This
isn't exclusive to pro wrestling.
No, it's also,
I see it in,
like,
sports. I see it in politics.
Oh,
I see
yeah.
it in everything. Oh, my God. People just, they just want Twitter, and Twitter's maybe the worst thing that's happened to the planet.
Well, so 98.5% of Twitter is bad.
Yes, yes.
The 1.5% of Twitter that I have found good is I have made a lot of good friends from Twitter.
Sure, yeah. No,
like, we've connected through Twitter.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, if it didn't have those small moments, I would have deleted
it 10 years ago. You'd be gone with it a long time ago.
Right. But
there are good people that can connect over common interests.
Yeah, and it's a good place to share my thoughts and my videos and whatever to get that. Because I know for every stupid, annoying, bad take I get in the comments section, there's 500 people watching a video who just scrolled by and said, oh, that was cool, and then kept scrolling. Yep. And that's what I want it for, you know?
There should be something about leaving more positive feedback for people. Like, I tend to see something good. Like, when I saw your Judgment Day character, right? And that's what I'm calling in my mind. It's
sure.
Like, Dijak is doing the Judgment Day character, right?
Justice would be. I say
Justice.
Because Judgment Day is an actual tangible thing on Monday Night Raw.
Understood.
I don't want to hint that I'm going to be joining.
The Justice character.
Right.
And I mentioned to you, I'm like, this is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm glad that it's doing well. And I try to do that with different things, is just reach out and be like, this is really good. You know, I remember a wrestler debuted on a pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And I liked the idea and the concept, but I knew it wasn't a main event spot. Mm-hmm. But I reached out to that performer and I was like, hey, like, I like this idea. I hope it does well for you. And it didn't end up going well for them. But
which is often the case.
Yeah, but the whole idea is that, you know,
sometimes it's in the performer's hands. Most of the time it's not. Most of the time it's something else, whether it's timing or something in the creative booking or something in the world, you know, something can happen that affects and changes
or Terry Taylor just didn't want to be the Red Rooster. He didn't want to be the cock of the walk.
Right. And Terry's admitted, I was in Terry's class for a long time, and Terry's a good friend of mine, and he's admitted to anyone who will listen that he wishes he could go back and adjust the way that he invested in that character. Because you never know how it's going to pan out, you know? I put everything I had into T-Bar. As silly as that sounds, because everyone hated it, but Retribution, I promise you, the five of us, whatever the number ended up being, because I know Mercedes left at some point, but we put everything we had into that presentation. So to put your heart and soul into something and just get consistent feedback that, like, this is horrible and this stinks, and, like, we are getting that, like, even especially during the pandemic, because you're getting these screens that are just people sitting at their computer and, like, something flashes. It's like, celebrate now. And it's like, so that's not genuine feedback. The crowd noise was just someone doing a level thing.
Which
so that,
Sean actually admitted to us they still kind of do.
I think.
And John Cena actually said in a promo with Austin Theory that they manipulate the crowd
noise. I don't think they do it. I don't hear it like a ton, but there are little moments I can
hear it.
Yeah. It's hard when you're in the arena because you're hearing the crowd and then you watch it back on TV and you're like, okay, they adjusted this.
And that's just because of my 20-year trained ear for, like, little details.
I totally get it. But, like, the feedback we were getting mostly during that time was just on Twitter, and it was overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah.
So it's just a rough spot to be in where it's like you're putting everything you have to make this good, and the feedback you're getting, most of which isn't, like, specifically directed at us, because it's not like, oh, you're doing a horrible job with this character, you stink and your wrestling is bad. It was just kind of this overarching, like, this, we don't like this, this stinks. And what?
Yeah.
And that's kind of an amalgamation of because they're heel characters. So it's like, on one hand, we want people to dislike the characters, but it's like, not really in this way. Like, I don't want you to, you know, just say that this is the worst thing you've ever seen and you're never going to watch WWE, you know, whatever the feedback was. And we were just avalanched with that constantly. So it was like, oh, this is so depressing. That being said, whenever the bell rang, I always had fun. Even to this day, at the highest of highs and lowest of lows, whenever the bell rings, I'm always having fun. And the day that stops will be the day that I stop pro wrestling, because that's my job. You know, I should rephrase the job. Like, what they pay me for is everything else. It's the travel, the training, the weightlifting, the all that stuff that I don't like doing, because who likes lifting weights?
You're fasting right now because I offered
right now,
you when you came down, like, I got to get your gas bill so I can pay that off. But I offered you lunch and you're like, nope, fasting.
Yeah.
And actually, and this is kind of breaking a fourth-ish wall, but I'm going to say it anyway.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
So we were at dinner at Kowloon after one of the shows, after one of the NXT shows, mm-hmm. and I was sitting next to Dakota Kai and Shayna Baszler, mm-hmm. and this was the weekend before one of the takeovers, mm-hmm. and Shayna was eating very small doses of the great Kowloon food,
yeah.
and it's not because she didn't like the food, it was because she was on a limited diet because she had a big match this weekend,
yep.
and you're in the same way because you've got the Last Man Standing match.
Except I'm very fortunate in that we're going to the Kowloon after that match. Yes. So I'm going to completely stuff my face. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, Kowloon's great. Andy, I know, is looking forward to it. Andy was very much featured on the Carmelo Hayes video the other night on NXT.
As he deserves. He's tremendous.
I'm so blessed that I was part of that video. Yeah. I do want to clean sports take, no wrestling. So the Celtics, they win last night.
Yep.
How do you feel about them? Do you think that they're going to, one, take it to a game seven? Do you think they're going to win game seven? Because I kind of feel like Jimmy Butler, even though he's predicting a win, he knows he's porked. He knows he's toast. it just gave me that
vibe. It's tough because I watch these games with my brother, not sitting next to me as I used to, which is where I got this shirt, actually. This is from the playoffs in 2008. My brother was a partial season ticket holder, and I used to go sit outside the Garden and stand in that big line to get tickets. I went to almost every playoff game that season.
Same. It's a great season.
Great season. A tremendous amount of fun. But I'm a huge, huge Celtics fan ever since my grandfather was watching with me in the mid to late 90s. Which were not the easiest to watch.
The Antoine Walker, Eric Williams.
Correct.
Dana Barros.
Correct.
Kevin yes. Gamble. Yes. Yep, this is my wheelhouse.
Yeah. So, unfortunately. So I watch them now with my brother. He lives in Michigan now. And so I text him throughout the games. And after game two, which was obviously very depressing. That's the game that Carmelo was at.
Yep.
Which at first I was tremendously jealous when I saw on his Instagram feed that he was there. And I was like, oh man, I'm a huge Celtics fan. I wish I was there too. and then the game happened. And I was like, oh man, I'm so happy I'm not there.
We will talk off the air about how that happened.
Fair enough.
And you'll be my guest at a Celtics game this upcoming season.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay. Yeah, I was super happy that I wasn't there because I would have been furious. I would have probably flipped out. I'm a bad sports loser, much worse than pro wrestling. So after that game, I texted my brother and I said, I think they'll get one in Miami, and then they'll probably be able to win at home. And then basically the series will come down to game six. That's what I told him. I said game six will be for the championship, for the Eastern Conference championship. I slightly changed that take after game three because I was so disgusted and so disappointed in the performance because it just screamed to me like, we don't want to be here anymore. We're phoning it in. We're giving up. And in my head was like, I was like, man, they have to hold the coach accountable. They have to, like, you have to hold Tatum accountable because at the end of the day, if you're trying your hardest and you lose, that's fair. I can live with that. If you're not trying your hardest and you're kind of phoning it, that's when it starts to be, you start to get the discussions of like, well, now something needs to change. So after game three, I was like, I don't know if I trust this team to even show up for game four, much less.
So being the sports radio talk show, you know, chirpy producer, being the basketball fan.
Yeah.
Because there are two different people, right?
Yeah.
And I try to, you know, mix them in.
Mm-hmm. People, you know, sure.
There's a lot of like, so I always try to be the Bobby Heenan of sports radio,
mm-hmm.
right? If it screws up, yeah, you can laugh at it. If I'm right, I'm the brain, of course, right? Because I'm just, you know, that's how I was kind of wired. Yeah. So. The basketball, the Celtics fan in me is watching a 34-year-old coach who
34 is such a – I saw
I
that from
Missoula.
I had
better seats then.
Yeah.
You know, at different points of the season last year.
Yeah.
Because he was a third-row coach.
Yeah.
And, of course, I sit front row usually when I go, which I'm blessed and thankful to the Celtics for that opportunity.
I saw his age for the first time a couple weeks ago, and I was blown away.
But what we're watching right now is we're watching a coach in real time learn how to be a head coach. And this is no different than
I think so.
Eric Spoelstra, his third year as the Heat coach. It's his first year with LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great book out by Ian Thompson that breaks down how Rick Carlisle, who is the coach of the Dallas Mavericks,
mm-hmm.
just X'd and O'd and coach circles around Eric Spoelstra and LeBron James.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how the Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki won that NBA Finals, is the coaching, you know, exploiting this switch. I know switching is like a big term now.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing switching for years in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
but it's now a buzz term.
Yeah.
And teams have been trying to, you know, design the offensive, you know, as the game has evolved. But
Spoelstra was a, it's funny because I,
and Spoelstra also, by the way, as young a coach as he was at the time with that Heat team and LeBron,
mm-hmm.
he had all these years previous as an assistant under Pat Riley.
I think he was even like the videotape manager.
He was. Yep. That's exactly what he was.
Yeah. So he, it's funny because,
and Missoula's only been a coach for maybe 3, 4, 5 years.
Right. So my memory of Spoelstra, because this was when I was in college. So all I had was time to watch sports and go to these games and whatever. So that I was as invested in that as anything I've ever done. I started training for pro wrestling in 2012. And that became my everything. So I didn't have as much time to watch the Celtics, as much time to watch the Red Sox or whatever. So I just kind of became for about 8 years, I became sort of a bandwagon fan, just kind of watching whenever I could, basically. And half of that time was in Orlando. So like I couldn't even get the games without some sort of package. And it just became very difficult. So Spoelstra for me at that time and still lives in my head as like just a complete buffoon, just like. Like I was like, this guy stinks. He's getting outcoached by everybody. He lets these three guys just walk all over him. I remember one time, this was back on old cell phones. I was texting one of my friends, and you have to use type in the numbers a bunch of times to get the, and it auto corrected. Oh, yeah. I tried to type Spoelstra and it came out as doormat. And I was like, that's fitting because he's getting walked all over by LeBron and Dwayne Wade. You know, they were just
funny.
Just completely ignore it was like he almost wasn't even the coach at that time because they were just doing whatever they wanted, and it kind of worked sometimes and sometimes it backfired badly. But yeah, now he's regarded as like one of the best coaches in the NBA, and it's I still have to overcome that narrative in my brain because I painted him as such a fool at that point. But yeah, obviously people can change and you get better at your job over time. So yeah, I hope it goes well
because he's still, and I haven't dug into the actual numbers of this playoff series, mm-hmm. but it still feels like the Celtics are getting the open shot and they're missing them.
Yeah.
And they just need to grind better player wise.
And
defensively.
And as a viewer, you watch the games in person, and I don't remember if this was on the road or in person. It might've been game 3. So maybe you got the TNT call of it,
yep.
but we have Stan Van Gundy sitting there breaking down stuff for us, and it's like, I think they should be running this high screen and roll with Tatum.
Yeah.
And you start watching it and you're like, clearly they should be. And it's just not happening. The adjustment isn't happening in the game. It's like, well, that's Stan Van Gundy telling us to recognize
also,
that.
I bet that's on some level informed because Tatum has said in the past that he wants Rob Williams on the floor more and more and more. Because Rob is such a good screener.
Yeah.
He's a good rim runner.
And I love Rob Williams, but I watched the game last night and it felt like he wasn't involved as much.
He's got a knee issue.
Does he?
So they're trying to maintain
and
that.
And I wasn't sure if that was a factor to like spreading the floor because I know he doesn't shoot well. He shot like a 7-foot jump shot for the first time last night, which I thought was hilarious. Because he pulled up from like 10 and was like, this isn't me. And then took one dribble and shot from 7.
Because he knows.
Right.
He knows
which
what
is
he
great.
Can do. He knows what he can't do.
It's great. It's great to have that role. And that speaks to my heart because I was always a power forward center type, even though not at the NBA size. I played D3 basketball. So it's obviously not a fair comparison. But just as a pro basketball, as a basketball enthusiast,
yeah.
I always like for big men and centers to be involved in stuff, and in today's game it very much isn't a lot of the time. But he, I feel like he's very important in terms of rim protection and rebounding and the drive and dish underneath to the, we used to call it the hash mark, that underneath position where you can kind of just get a dunk or an easy layup. But yeah, last night it felt like he was not on the floor, and they almost felt quicker and more spread out because of it. So I don't know, maybe if
they've also made a couple of adjustments the last two games where their passing just is so much smoother.
Yeah.
And I guess, and it's because they're making sure that they're not as spread out,
mm-hmm.
that there's at least somebody there who's like, oh, here comes the double team. I can get it right out.
Yeah.
Like there was an instance last night where Tatum's driving to the basket and Marcus Smart is sneaking behind all the defenders. So three defenders are collapsing on Tatum, and Tatum just literally throws it behind him to Marcus Smart,
yeah.
who has a wide open three and makes it.
Yeah, I remember that.
And play. That's a big difference from what they were doing, where they're just pounding the ball.
It is big, yeah. And the dribble drive seemed to be more under control. There was a lot of like dribbling like off defenders and off their feet and stuff in the first few games, and I was like, this kind of stinks.
And they're not as blatantly hunting matchups.
Yeah.
As they once were. They're kind of letting the basketball dictate
mm-hmm.
what matchups happen and getting that open shot.
Yeah, it just feels a lot better.
Now Jaylen Brown's got to get his hand thing and shoot better, yeah. And he did that last
night. I'm not great at predictions, but if you put a gun to my head, it's before last night's game, I expected, even if Boston won last night, I said to myself, okay, Miami's probably going to win game six. Now I'm not, I don't know. I think it'll be close.
The Celtics are playing at the Garden Monday night.
You think so?
And I think they're going to win.
Yeah.
And I also think that once they win, they're going to blow doors on Denver.
Think so.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how I feel right now. Now, if you would ask me after
sure,
game
yeah,
three,
no, it changes day
like,
to day, right?
You know what? Like, I don't want to fire the coach. I want to get somebody to help this yeah. coach. I want to kind of change a few parts.
Yeah.
You know, nothing it's major.
It's hard to...
But I have a daily talk show to produce yeah. and be a part of. So, like, my emotions,
yeah.
like, that part of it. But, like, if I'm looking at it from 10,000 feet, I'm like, this is still a good basketball team.
It's so hard to
It's
predict.
A team of runs. It's a team of streaks. It's a make-or-miss league, which is mm-hmm. what the Celtics' identity actually oh, yeah. is. The Jimmy Butler Miami Heat, they're defensive-oriented. Everything runs through Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
The Celtics are... Pass the ball, get an open shot, pace and space, right? Mm-hmm. 3 and D, which yeah. is the rest of the NBA.
Right.
But the difference from the Celtics this year to last year is they were really like locked down defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they have that in them.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of getting back to that defensive first mindset. And once they do that, they can roll.
I hope so, yeah. It's I've seen this team enough times where it's like, oh, they're on such a roll, they're on such a whatever. And then it's like, there's like a bad, like first 2 minutes and they just, just
yep.
full. And it's like, so I can easily see that happening, but I can also easily see them playing like they did last night and just being like, hey, we're the best team on earth and we're going to go play like the best team on earth. And so it's like, that's a complete non-answer. But I think the reality of it is they're going to take like five shots in the first 5 minutes, and if they all go in, then they're going to win the game. And if half of them don't, then it's probably going to be a lot closer and muddier. So who knows?
So Celtics game on me next season.
I look forward to it.
That'll be a good time.
I haven't been in forever. God, I've been so busy.
And now that you're local, like
I know,
it's a little bit easier. A
lot easier.
So Sunday, Lowell, Massachusetts, battleground, last man standing match. Hopefully you'll win. I'll be there in attendance. I might be might see a little bit more of me, but we'll talk about that. depending on how things go.
Yeah.
You can get tickets at songuscenter.com. It's close to selling out for what they have put available ticket-wise on the market.
Mm-hmm.
If that expands out for TV production, so on and so on, hopefully that's the case, and you can jam more people in the building.
Sure.
But Dijak, mm-hmm. Justice.
That's right.
Justice character, Dijak.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time today. I want to do this again if they let me do it again, because I want to talk to you about the pandemic era of WWE, because there are great stories.
So many stories.
I have to go produce my radio show.
It'll be a movie one day. Don't worry.
Oh, and once you get out of wrestling, if you want to do a podcast and I still have a media thing, like we're going to talk.
For sure.
We're gonna talk. There's a business option there.
For sure.
Dijak has been my guest today. We'll see you all Sunday at Battleground in Lowell.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.